Well, greetings. Welcome to the fourth dividing line of the week. Don't worry, we're not doing one tomorrow. Lord willing, I will be just wrapping up a marathon study session on bike tomorrow about now. So you will be free for the weekend. Before we go to our immediate topic, I just saw this come across Twitter. Bill de Blasio from New York City. Quote, I assure you, if an NYPD officer calls you or shows up at your door to ask about something you did, that makes people think twice, and we need that. I think that has an educating impact on people. I think that has a sobering impact that we need. Isn't this the guy that was defunding the police last summer? And now he's saying that they should be used to frighten people into behaving properly because people are reporting them. Big Brother is going to send his agents to have a little talk with you if you do not do everything that Big Brother tells you to do. I keep trying to tell people 1984 was not meant to be a manual of a perfect society. It seems that some people read that and go, this sounds really cool. As long as I can be the guy who, you know, is one of the elites, you know, and everybody else gets to be the little scum people down there on the bottom of the thing. Anyway, so sometime this morning before noon, a friend of mine sent me this this tweet, and I confess I'm a little they get a little bit overzealous in their complimenting you or talking about what you've done and things like that. But mine is the first name mentioned here, and given the other two names it's attached to, I'm not sure how I leapt to the front of this line. But someone as deeply respected for her long term, I mean the deep scholarly work that she's been doing in her books and speaking for literally decades, Jory Micah, M.A., Christian Doctrine / Church History. Jory Micah says, if the FBI comes knocking at my door looking for Christian leaders radicalizing young men to hate, I'm pointing them to James White, John MacArthur, and Doug Wilson. Who are you pointing the FBI to? So there you go. I would imagine most Christians are probably going, well, I'm actually not really interested in talking to the FBI. The FBI really doesn't have any role in my theological argumentation. But there you go. That's the day we live in. And that has been illustrated very, very well by what has taken place since the Atlanta area shootings earlier in the week. And let's just, you would think by now we would have learned this lesson, but learning lessons isn't what anything's about anymore. Neither you nor I have anywhere near enough facts to be speculating, coming to conclusions, anything else. It could literally be months down the road before you would actually get all the facts that need to be had to have a fair and meaningful conversation. But we left the fair and meaningful realm a long, long time ago. Long, long time ago. And that's a sad reality. Instead, whenever you have any kind of situation that can be twisted into a support for the narrative. That's what the left does. And so yesterday, when news came out that the suspect who is in custody was a member of a Baptist church. Now, this is Atlanta. And while the percentage of the population that is a member of a Bible-believing church is indeed decreasing in the Atlanta area, it's still not the most unusual thing. This isn't the Northeast yet. This isn't the Northwest. So the first thing I started seeing was when someone by the name of Robert P. Jones, who is about as woke can be, he wrote a book called Too Long White. And so he's, you know, full on neo-Marxist, CRT, woke as the day is long. And he put out a tweet that all of a sudden all these other people started grabbing hold of. So I think he was selected to try the ground first, and then everybody jumped on to that to make it look like it was, you know, this big thing. But he put out a tweet that said, "Not incidental. Atlanta murder suspects SBC Church belongs to Founders Ministry Group that claims white fragility is pro-racism, calls critical race theory godless and materialistic ideologies, equates women preaching with abuse." So it didn't take long for people to start grabbing hold of that. So let me show you, for example, Anthony Bradley, who has radically changed in the past 11 years, that's for sure. But especially like so many. I mean, I didn't pull it up, but someone posted a series of Kyle James Howard tweets from 2013. it was basically saying, why does race have to be about everything? And there's not enough evidence to convict that guy and da-da-da-da. Well, everything he wouldn't say today, but yeah, things have changed a lot. But Dr. Anthony B. Bradley requotes Robert P. Jones's tweet. Now, let's leave that up there so people, because that gives you Jones's tweet too. Belongs to Founders Ministry Group. How do you become a part of that? You give the name of your church to Founders and say, yeah, we think that the founders of the SBC were primarily Reformed, and like what y'all are doing about that. I mean, that's what Founders was about initially. There aren't any, to my knowledge, any tests or anything else that goes along with that. It's just they have a website, and if a church says, hey, we're going to be consistent with where these guys are coming from as far as holding to at least something along the lines of the abstract of theology, something that specifically indicates a Reformed comprehension of the gospel, that's what it's about. So the Atlanta murder suspects SBC Church belongs to Founders Ministry Group that claims, and then they take just, in other words, Founders, Tom Askell, Jared Longshore, you'll notice they have begun an organization to deal with these cultural issues. It includes Vody Balcom, and Tom was very important in raising the funds for Vody's heart surgery and things like that. And so you take these snippets. So white fragility is pro-racism, which is true. It's a true statement. The whole white fragility argument could not survive 3 seconds in cross-examination. It's irrational, illogical, circular in all of its reasoning. There's no question about that. And that's why you don't hear debates on it, because the people taking that position know that they will have to spin in circles. And as long as they run up against someone who knows how to demonstrate that, and there are a few of us that can, they'll collapse instantly. Calls critical race theory godless and materialistic ideologies. Once again, fully defensible, easily defended in any type of meaningful exchange, which they do not allow. These types of people are not concerned about that. They know they have the media in their pocket, and so they can make whatever claims they want, knowing they will never have to defend them in any meaningful context whatsoever. And equates women preaching with abuse, which I would assume has something to do with their stand against egalitarianism, and they were involved in sponsoring the debate that took place on that subject before coronavirus. I think it was the summer before coronavirus, as I recall. So what you do is you take the buzzwords, and because you're not concerned about the truthfulness of what you're saying, you're just trying to create the emotional switch in the minds of people that this group is a bunch of bad white supremacist Ku Klux Klan members. And you know you can't prove it. You don't care about slandering. Slander is the lifeblood of the left today. And so you just throw it out there. But, you know, you'll notice I've seen zero data. Zero data. Was the shooter in services the last Sunday? Has he been attending this church regularly? I mean, everything I've seen was from like 6 years ago when he was in the youth group. Maybe he was. I don't know. But what does that have to do with anything? Let's turn this around for just a second, which you're not allowed to do. You're not allowed to do this, but right now, the number of people being shot each week and killed in Chicago is on the low end. Why? Because it's stinking cold in Chicago. Okay? Gang members do not want to be out in their gangbanger T-shirts when it's 12 degrees Fahrenheit, but that wind comes off the lake and it's like 30 degrees below zero. So people actually get a bit of a break. I think there was only 5 people killed last week, which for Chicago, that's awesome. But we know that Chicago is a war zone, and we know it's black on black violence primarily. These are just facts. Can't argue with them. No one talks about it. No one cares. During the summer, a weekend with only 8 people killed would be a vacation for the Chicago Police Department. Just nope. It's like, wow, what happened? Who sprayed the chill out spray all across the city? But would it not be logical to assume that many of the gang members who are involved in gangbanging in Chicago grew up in black churches? And would it not be logical that many of those almost all of those black churches in Chicago present CRT, are based upon an acceptance of James Cone and that whole radical perspective? So that means that proves something, right? In Robert P. Jones's world, logically that should prove something, right? That we could draw connections to all sorts of murder after murder after murder after murder, because they went to those churches, right? They may not go now, but they did when they were younger, right? Just like this kid, right? But you're not allowed to do that, because no one's actually seriously saying, I can actually prove cause and effect here. I can actually demonstrate that there's a meaningful connection here. I can actually demonstrate that arguing against critical theory and demonstrating what its history is about and what its real intentions are somehow has to do with sex addiction for a 21-year-old who decides to remove areas of temptation near him, which we all know is insane. That's not going to change anything. And in fact, I read one story. It said he was arrested on his way to Florida, where he may have been planning to do more of it. What? It is insulting to the human mind, to rationality, to logic, to even suggest that there is a meaningful connection here, that there is something in the teachings of founders or this church. I think it's called Crab Apple something, which, again, it's Georgia. That there is, that either of these organizations teach anything that would in any way be logically construed as giving permission to someone to do these things. Any more than, well, in fact, I will be able to make, because of one of the articles I'm going to read here, I will be able to make a very strong argument that CRT, when it's wokeism, when it's applied, does inculcate violence. It does. In fact, since you pulled that down, I will look at an article by Damon Young in verysmartbrothers.theroot.com. Major journalistic source writes an article, "Whiteness is a pandemic." Whiteness is a pandemic. This is a black man. "I don't have much to add here today that hasn't already been said. Whiteness is a public health crisis. It shortens life expectancy. It pollutes air. It constricts equilibrium. It devastates forests. It melts ice caps. It sparks and funds wars. It flattens dialects. It infests consciousnesses. And it kills people, white people and people who are not white, my mom included. There will be people who die in 2050 because of white supremacy-induced decisions from 1850. A line can and should be drawn from the actions of the white supremacist who walked into three Atlanta-area massage parlors yesterday." How do you know he's a white supremacist? Because he did something evil. And all evil in this world now, in these people's minds, is the result of white supremacy. They can't tell you what it is. It's this vague something, but it's white supremacy. It's the big evil. And so he's a white supremacist because he did something bad. And when black guys kill Asian guys, remember the guy that ran across the street and flattened that poor little Asian man, he died? He wasn't white, he was black. And so he was forced to do that by white supremacy, even though he's black. So black people can be forced to do evil things like killing each other by white supremacy. White supremacy is all powerful. Evidently. It can force people to do stuff. Six of whom were of Asian descent, to the relentless anti-Asian rhetoric pollinating national discourse over the past year. So in other words, that's Trump's fault. The former president, even though the police, by the way, said they have no evidence there was any racial motivation at all, but hey, the former president and the party of the former president can and should be blamed for this and the sudden increase of racist violence against Asian Americans, even if it's not done by whites. It's not what he said, but that's the reality. The line doesn't stop there, though. It extends back 400 years and has tentacles clawing everywhere white supremacy exists here in America, which is everywhere. It's everywhere. It's this white supremacy is omnipresent. It's omnipotent, omnipresent. It's everywhere. And it's behind the devil made me do it. It's the new devil. Yeah, that's what it is. There's a line connecting this act of terror to the 11 people killed at the Tree of Life Synagogue in 2018 and the 9 people killed at Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in 2015. By the way, you'll notice there won't be anything at all about any unarmed white person that's been killed. There won't be anything about any Asian people being killed by black people, and there'll be nothing about any black people killed by black people. No, 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 no. It's very, very specific because the narrative cannot survive the facts. The narrative can't survive the numbers of the facts, so you have to be very, very careful. Yeah. But also to gentrificate. Okay, so now what you do is you need to get all of your woke talking points in at once. So here they come. But also to gentrification, to redlining, to racial profiling, to gerrymandering, to voter oppression, to mass incarceration, to the war on drugs, to the subprime mortgage crisis, to the vast disparities in both COVID deaths and who receives COVID vaccinations, to how the men and women who stormed the Capitol just went home and had dinner with their families afterward. While we were still processing, recovering from what we witnessed, they were already back on their couches. I think there's a typo there. Watching Criminal Minds. Then, here you go. Here's the last paragraph. White supremacy is a virus that, like other viruses, will not die until there are no bodies left for it to infect. Which means the only way to stop it is to locate it, isolate it, extract it, and kill it. I guess a vaccine could work too, but we've had 400 years to develop one, so I won't hold my breath. Now, in the old world, where human beings were responsible as human beings because they were human beings, in the old world where you held a white man, a black man, an Asian man, a Hispanic man, whatever, to the same standard of what racism is supposed to mean. This man is a black supremacist racist, very clearly. This is irresponsible. It's absurd. It is ethnocentric. It is the type of rhetoric that was very common post-Civil War in the South. But this is accepted and celebrated. And this is the result of CRT. This is the result of the entire woke movement and the fact that last summer, if you didn't say Black Lives Matter, you were canceled, and every major corporation had to open their pocketbooks and send billions of dollars to Black Lives Matter, who did nothing with it other than enriching leftist causes and getting Joe Biden elected. They didn't go to Chicago and save any black lives because they don't believe any of that stuff. Nobody on the left believes their rhetoric. Come on, they don't believe it. If you're some liberal white person that actually really believes this stuff, you're being used. You were used back in the 50s and 60s in Eastern Europe, and you're being used again. You're being used again. Whiteness is a pandemic. There you go. Damon Young. So, yeah. So Anthony Bradley jumps in after Robert Jones's initial shot. And he says, again, CRT is not the threat SBC leaders should be worried about. So don't worry about what's actually causing this stuff. Don't worry about, you know, the fact that this violence in the black community has to do with family disintegration and stuff like that, which black leaders have been saying forever and a day. But don't worry about this critical theory stuff, this neo-Marxism that divides and creates intersectionality and all. No. It's the anti-CRT gang using the faux CRT hysteria. So there's nothing to see. Don't look at the leaders of the military who are more concerned about promoting critical race theory and LGBTQ, RSTUV plus stuff in the military rather than dealing with China and dealing with what's going to be coming from that direction. Don't worry about that. Don't worry about what's happening in the universities. Don't worry about the end of religious freedom, the end of the freedom of speech. Don't worry about critical gender theory forcing 200-pound boys onto your girls' volleyball team. No, that's all faux hysteria. There's nothing there. Here's a man who's done a 180. This was not him 10 years ago. The same with the BD and the others. Just 180. And it's not because of anything externally. It's because of the acceptance of the narrative. Using the faux CRT hysteria to mask, ready? their Jim Crow era evangelicalism. Jim Crow era evangelicalism. So, as we're going to see, we have folks who are literally preaching that if you're a black Christian, you should leave your church and go to a black church only. Self-segregation. That's not coming from us. That's not coming from Hispanics. That's not coming from Asians. That's coming from the black community. So who's doing the Jim Crow thing? To mask their Jim Crow era evangelicalism, the same one that they called MLK a communist, the discipleship crisis is their errant gospel understanding. Now, last few sentences sound like he ran out of space or was typing on a phone or something, and you end up with who knows what. But the discipleship crisis is their errant gospel understanding. So if you have proper gospel understanding, CRT is good. CRT is a proper and useful tool. That's where Anthony Bradley is now. He has completely reversed himself as to where he once was. And then the plot thickens. Isn't it interesting that Anthony Bradley and Jamar Tisby both retweeted the same tweet? So the plot thickens. Jamar Tisby, head of The Witness, author of a number of books, one of the leading voices now of the Leave Loud movement, which is a movement encouraging black Christians to leave multi-ethnic churches. Self-segregate. Divide, self-segregate. That's what they're saying. Go listen to them. It's all our fault, of course. It's anyone who doesn't buy their narrative. So we'll talk about that in a moment. But the plot thickens. The suspect's church is a member of the Founders Ministry Network. See below for description. Yeah, that absurd, and Jamar knows this. Jamar's a smart man. He knows that Robert P. Jones's description is ridiculously dishonest. But I listened to Jamar's own thing on The Witness from last week, and he was desperately dishonest in the things he said in that as well. So the narrative allows for Ninth Commandment violations right, left, and center, because that's just the Ninth Commandment. The First Commandment is the narrative. So, see below for description. Description of what? Listen, what's going on in churches around racism and sexism are a harbinger, of what's happening or will happen in the rest of society we ignore at our own risk. And so, Founders Ministries is responsible. Now, no logical or rational person would make that assertion, but logic and rationality is just that is not something that is relevant to those pushing the narrative. The narrative of intersectionality, the narrative of non-biblically defined racism. So you can blame anybody. And so the plot thickens. So Jamar joins in with the slander. And this is slander. Robert P. Jones is guilty of slander. Jamar Tisby is guilty of slander. Anthony Bradley is guilty of slander. It's all slander in the biblical sense of that term. It is. There's no question about that. None whatsoever. There's no way they could ever defend it. But there you have it. Jamar jumps in on, and I'm sure there are others. I bet if I had taken the time to go to, and I did at one point, but I didn't start going down the thing, I could have found all sorts of other folks that chimed in on the Robert P. Jones, especially after they retweeted it. I'm sure I would be interested in how many comments there are just on that one tweet. Be huge. Now, as I mentioned last week, Jamar Tisby went on The Witness and gave his testimony of leaving Loud. And I came up a couple times, specifically what I was mentioned in was the comments that I made after the election in 2016, which, by the way, I did not vote for Donald Trump in 2016, but everybody was commenting on the fact that he had said that he did not feel safe worshiping with white people the Sunday after the election. Remember that? And so, once again, as I think any responsible Christian minister would have to, when you have someone presenting a theology that grounds the unity of the church in something other than the person of Jesus Christ, when you have someone introducing racism, racial disparities into the body, the way that he was, you have to respond to that. You have to say, this is an error and here's why. And that's what we did. I remember I had two black brothers call in, and they did so on their own, as I recall. I do not think I asked them to call in. They called in on their own and joined in the criticism of this idea. But the narrative is from The Witness right now, which used to be called RON, the Reformed African American Network. And then in 2016, right after that, they changed their name and got rid of Reform because they're not Reformed anymore. They no longer find in God's sovereignty and soteriology and the relationship to the Trinity and Christ. That's not their thing anymore. Their thing now is equity, social justice, race. And so it's probably best they did change their name as far as that's concerned. But in 2016, when that took place, he says, by the way, that was the first time he had heard about me. Now, all sorts of other people have been commenting on it. I was not the only one who did. He blames it almost all completely on me because I did that. He was just buried, and he started to twitch every time he'd open up his phone and, you know, all the rest of this kind of stuff. And it's all my fault. Though there are lots of people who had commented before me. Like I said, I had brothers who commented on the program, who called in. And he said it was the first time he'd ever heard about me, which is not true. That was the same year, about 4 months earlier, 5 months earlier, that the young man with the sagging pants flipping off the cops thing happened on Facebook, where my forward-facing video camera caught this kid flipping off the cops and stuff. And I made a comment, as so many black leaders made comments, about the impact of not having fathers in the community. And Ron went after me. So there's no way. He's just misremembering. But the whole idea is, it was all this terrible, horrible, white supremacist, nasty man stuff. And if you're asking, did they bother to try to actually substantiate these accusations against an elder in the church? No, they did not. They don't feel like they're under that kind of stricture. The narrative allows them to say whatever they want. They don't have to have any type of biblical accountability. That's one of the problems. So, that was, there were a few people named by Jamar Tisby, Vody, Doug Wilson was just described. Doug Wilson was described in all the ways that Doug Wilson in his books has said he will be described by dishonest people. saying, so if you want to say these things, here are the actual facts. Well, they say them, but they don't care about the facts. They don't care about responses. They don't care that they could never in any meaningful fashion go one-on-one. And they know that. That's why they do it the way they do it. But they also went after John Piper, and they went after John Piper because of Doug Wilson. There was talk about the PCA. There was talk about RTS. There was nothing about the people that he had worked for at RTS, which I found interesting. So there was just a small number of us who got named by name as white supremacists and racists and all the buzzwords that they continue to violate any meaningful biblical parameters of the ninth commandment and stuff like that, because they know they can't back it up. They know it's not possible, because to make those things stick, they have to change the definitions to something that's unbiblical. And they know they'd never be able to do it if they actually had to open the Bible and say, well, here's what it says and here's what you've done. Because that's not their parameters any longer. Their parameters is critical theory and stuff like that. So you would think that I would, focus upon what was said about me. That wasn't the thing that concerned me all that much. There was a previous program in this Leaving Loud series they're doing. We're talking about leaving these churches, these white spaces. And that had to do with Ali Henney's appearance on, I believe it was February 3rd. I think it was February 3rd, somewhere around there. I think it's the first in this series, Leaving Loud. She's vice president of this organization now called The Witness. And I was more concerned about this than I was the one where they're going after me. I expect that. A lot of people will ask, how can you not let that bother you? Because I know what the truth is. When I know that these people could never stand in front of me and say the same words without my being able to utterly refute them with the facts, then why should I give any credibility to this person? You know, people get so upset about what people say about them, but the fact is, why give them credibility? Why give any weight to their words? I've said to many people, you'll burn out of ministry very, very quickly until you learn the rule. Give people's criticism the weight it is due based upon what those individuals have actually done in life. When they, over decades, consistently do the work, then you can listen to the criticisms. But the non-avatared Twitter dude that joined last week and has two followers, if you even bother reading that tweet, you are wasting your time. All right? So just this whole idea, it goes back to the empathy thing. This whole idea that all opinions are equal, that you should give everyone's opinion equal weight, is utter absurdity. We never thought like this until the past 10 years. And look at the mess it's gotten us into. No, I instead listened to this other program because I'm hearing this Leaving Loud. Leaving what? Leaving white spaces. This is a movement to create a segregated black church. It is literally, these folks are literally seeking to convince black Christians to leave interracial churches for their own good. Now, I have talked, not only do we know black Christians who oppose all of this, and they are constantly attacked, and they're called every name under the sun, and you know who I'm talking about, and they stand strong, we pray for them, and they get treated like dirt. All right? So this isn't all of them, but I've talked to black Christians who are not famous, who've never written a blog article, who've never been on a program, and there's been an interesting consistency. I don't chase black believers at my church down or people like that and say, hey, I want to talk to you about this. It's almost always they come to me and say, this has been my experience. I've seen what you've gone through. Let me tell you something about my experience. And what I've heard is they have either come out of black churches and are now attending churches that are focused upon the exegesis, preaching of the word, making application to what's going on in the world, fighting abortion, and standing, proclaiming Christ's lordship in society, and so on and so forth. Why are they there? And it's what they've said. Because in the black church I was a part, that's all they talked about, was blackness. Honoring your blackness. The goodness of your blackness. And they didn't proclaim the whole counsel of God. It was all race and ethnicity and all the good things about being black. Well, I already recognize I've been redeemed by God and I'm black, and therefore that's great, but that's not enough. And that doesn't make me better than somebody else. I want the whole counsel of God. And so I've met people who have disappointed their families. Their families were angry with them that they didn't go to a all-black church. What are you doing over there with those Asians, Hispanics, and whites, and what's wrong with the rest of us type of a thing? Because the narrative is just repeated over and over and over again. It becomes a mantra. That's dangerous. It's extremely dangerous. It's extremely dangerous. So what caught my attention was in this first one, what you have is Allie Henney literally preaching. She calls it preaching. To black Christians, you need to get out. You need to leave loud. And the basis is basically she is exhorting Christians to develop a root of bitterness in their heart. To take every microaggression, such as if someone calls you by the name of someone else, because of course they're a racist and all black people look the same to them, right? Confuses you with somebody else. Then you're to take that. And let's say it is because the person doesn't know who you are. Let's say it isn't. What they're saying is you need to take that and you need to nurture that. You need to let that make you so angry and so hurt. And you need to take it personally. And you need to develop a root of bitterness in your soul that starts to threaten your self-view of yourself. You need to let that person's slight of you anger you so much that you'll eventually get out of there. That's sinful. It's sinful. It's in violation of Philippians chapter 2. You are thinking of yourself more than others. You're putting your things before others. And the issue is, have you been called to serve God, serve Christ in a particular local fellowship? That's the issue. Your skin color is irrelevant. And the narrative says, I'm all wrong about that. I'm sorry. You show me where the Bible tells me. You show it to me. You know you can't. You know that all that woke-a-Jesus that you've been given would collapse in a second in any meaningful cross-examination. There's no consistency to it. You do not use the same methods of interpretation to substantiate this stuff that you use when talking about the resurrection of Christ or the deity of Christ or justification by faith, which you're not talking much about these days. You were a decade ago, you're not now. And you know it. You know it. In your honest moments, you know, yes, we have changed. We've gotten woke. You have changed. That's the reality. So I want you to listen. I want you to hear what is being said in that community. And that these folks are, they want to get this word out. They want to create unhappiness amongst the people in your church. And they want to exhort black people. And I suppose other minorities might just go, well, that sounds good to me too. But they want to exhort people to develop a root of bitterness and divide the congregation. That's what they want. So you don't believe me? Let's listen.
You know, I'm not going to be before you long, but I just need to preach here for a minute. First of all, I want to say that Black Christians, you have not been called to die on the cross for white people's racial sins. That's not your calling. I hear people say, but you know, I feel called. That I'm not going to tell you what your blessings are. I am not the Holy Ghost, so I can't tell you what God is calling you to or to not or not to do. But I'm just questioning it. So I want to read some scripture here because I need to get in the book for a minute
get
in the book. That's preaching from the word. So let's see what's said.
You know, I hear Tyler saying, well, you know, yeah, you know, we need to leave. And I can hear, you know, Black Christians being like, oh, but should we do this? Especially those of us who have been baptized figuratively or literally in these white spaces. It's like, oh, but can we leave? Should we leave?
Think about what that would mean to view the church in which you were baptized as a white space. See, I can't even imagine it. That's not what baptism is about. It had nothing to do with color. It's just so sad when such a thick filter has been created that you start identifying things as white spaces. Are there Asian spaces? Are there Russian spaces? Are there Hispanic spaces?
Isn't that segregation? Like what? Blah, 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 blah. So let me get in the book for a minute. I'm reading from Matthew chapter 10. I'm going to start in verse 8.
Now, she said just a second ago, I was drinking at the time. She said, someone said, that's segregation. Yeah, it is. That's what she's talking about. She's talking about segregated church. Segregated church.
I'm reading out the New Revised Standard Version.
Come on, the Scholar's Version. Okay, go ahead.
Scholar's Version, yes. Right. Yes, I'm putting that MDiv to use, fam. I'm putting it to use. Okay. These are the words of Jesus. Cure the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons. You receive without payment, give without payment. Mm. Take no gold or silver or copper in your belts, no bag for your journey or two tunics or sandals or a staff, for laborers deserve their food. Whatever town or village you enter, find out who in it is worthy and stay there until you leave. As you enter the house, greet it. If the house is worthy, let your peace come upon it. But if it is not worthy, let your peace return to you. If anyone will not welcome you or listen to your words, shake the dust from your feet as you leave that house or town. Truly, I tell you, it will be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah on the day of judgment than for that town. So hear me, saints. Yes, I know in context, Jesus is talking about the disciples ministering, going to towns, going out two by two and all that, and going in and ministering. But I think that there's...
Right. So this is before the Holy Spirit comes. This is before the church, in the sense of the New Testament church anyways. This is specifically apostolic ministry during the ministry of Jesus. So quite aware of that, which should be taken to mean something, but...
There's a word and an application for us here today.
Mm-hmm.
The houses, the towns that we're going into, fam, that is the white church. And you know what? I believe that there's some of us that God...
Did she say that is the white church? Let's catch that again.
An application for us here today.
Mm-hmm.
The houses... The towns that we're going into, fam, that is the white church. And you know what? I believe that there's some of us that God drew into some of these white Christian spaces. There's some of us who were called, there were some of us who were sent, and there's some of us who just went. But you're in these spaces. You're sitting under their preaching.
You're sitting under their preaching. I want you to listen to the language. This is the language of people seeking to cause division. The scriptures are clear about people who seek to bring disunity in the body of Christ. They're preaching. Not the preaching of the word. That brings unity. When everyone who comes together, and that's the unity that is brought about by the Lord's Supper. One table, one people, one message, one prayer. It's beautiful. You're seated under their preaching, not our preaching. We have ours, they have theirs. You're like an alien. You catching how this works? It's sad.
You're fellowshipping with them. You maybe, those of you who grew up in the Black church, maybe you've had to check aspects of your culture at the door. Maybe you have to listen to your Hezekiah Walker and your John P. Key and your Kirk Franklin and your Tamela Mann and all that in the car as you drive to the church, because you ain't going to hear that. You're going to hear Bethel and Hillsong and everything else whenever you show up at church on Sunday. But you know what you said? I'm here. I believe in the mission of this church. I believe what this church is called to do in my city or in my region. So I'm here. You have dealt with people mistaking you for other people in your church that you don't even look like. The only commonality that you have is that you have Black skin. You've been mistaken for people who are taller than you, who are skinnier than you, who are much prettier or uglier than you are, who wear glasses or don't wear glasses, whose hair is in a completely different style than yours, and you've had to deal with microaggressions.
So those are all microaggressions. Folks, if you follow biblical parameters, again, Philippians chapter 2, for example, Colossians chapter 3, where you put others before yourself, you don't wear your emotions on your sleeve, and you do not, you do something called extend forgiveness, because you know how much you need to be forgiven. When you have a mature congregation that does this, that is a place that is a joy to minister in. It's not going to be perfect. We're still sinners. But when there is this unity, because we're all working in the same direction, this is how you destroy that. This is how you start whispering, you know, you're not being treated right. And it doesn't have to be for, I've seen this so many times, it had nothing to do with race. You know, the pastor just walked right by you just now. Didn't say a word to you. It's not all that nice, you know. And you haven't been getting as much out of his sermons recently. And you know, those people in the choir, they're really cliquish. And I'm not sure I like how some of the budget money was being spent. And those new choir robes, I almost feel physically nauseous with them. See, there's so many things. Once you're infected with the spirit of dissatisfaction and discontentment and selfishness, you can find anything. Anyone who's been involved in church for any time at all, who's met with someone who's leaving, who even gets a semi-honest answer as to why they're leaving. You almost never get that when you're an elder, by the way. You learn it from other people what the real reasons were. Knows that sometimes you go, you left because of that? You left because how somebody parks? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It is so easy to stoke the fires of discontentment and create division. And there are a few things that suck the life out of a minister more than having to constantly deal with that kind of petty microaggression. This is how you destroy churches.
Had to deal with the people reaching for your hair. You've had to deal with the people that you've been going to this church for 2 and 3 years, and they still act like you're a visitor. You've had to deal with sermon after sermon that ignores your reality, that ignores your experience, that is preached.
Your reality, your experience. See the selfishness of this, the self-centeredness of this, all based on skin color? Really? You know, the thing that's most sad about this is that I often speak about the fact that we experience a miracle in the ministry of the word, in sound Bible-believing churches all the time. One man brings one message, and the Spirit takes that message and applies it to all these different hearts with all these different needs. But it's done by the Spirit in the ministry. Now, if you got somebody sitting out there saying, well, you need to preach a sermon that's specifically about this, rather than I'm here to hear the word of God and I am open to the Spirit of God making application as they see fit. Totally different attitudes. This is how to destroy a church. And by the way, I feel sorry for any black church these people end up going to. Because once you've got this kind of self-centeredness, you're going to take it everywhere. And I've seen it. Believe me, I've seen people come into a church, and as soon as they started talking about their former church, I'm like, oh boy, we're going to have problems. You don't talk about your former church that way, because you're just bringing those same that same problem with you. And now it's going to be on our doorstep rather than somebody else's. And right now, you may like us really well, but 6 months from now, you won't. And we'll have the same problems your last church had.
From the pinnacles of white privilege.
The preaching from the pinnacles of white privilege.
Had to swallow certain indignities. You've had to, as you've seen the people around you at your church in 2016 and in 2020, vote for, promote a president that stands for some things that, yeah, you know, he might ostensibly be pro-life, but he said some things and did some things that show his character. And you sit in here with people who...
Okay, but you're never, ever in these situations, ever, because Jamar Tisby did the same thing. For him, 2016, if you voted for Trump, you failed black people. Nothing about Hillary Clinton's character. Nothing about Hillary Clinton's policies. Nothing about Hillary Clinton being owned by Planned Parenthood. The Biden situation, the Equality Act, everything going on right now. Irrelevant, because it doesn't fit the narrative. Doesn't fit the narrative. It's incoherent.
They maybe condemned you because you live with your boyfriend or your girlfriend outside of wedlock, but then they were cool with this president that didn't seem to have any kind of moral compass.
Okay, so think about that one for a second. You might be at a church that says, well, you can't live with your girlfriend or boyfriend and be a part of this fellowship outside of wedlock, but you can vote for Trump, so you're a heretic. Now think about it. If I had 47 other people to vote for, I could try to find someone who hadn't been divorced, which only a matter of literally decades ago would have been enough to keep anybody from getting elected president. Now it's not even given consideration. But if you only have two options that have any chance of winning whatsoever, fascinatingly, what we're being told is you vote for the option that will continue murdering the most black babies possible, or you're failing the black people.
You've dealt with all sorts of things in your life and experience in this congregation. My question...
Did you hear anything positive there? No, it's all been, think of all the negatives. Someone touched your hair. Dwell on the negatives. Build up that root of bitterness. Let it grow inside you. Don't think about any of the positive things. Don't think about any times when you, together with others, you know, the last time, I didn't even know it was going to be the last time, but the last time I was in London, probably will be the last time, but the last time I was in London, I got together with a local church just through the internet, and they said, we're going to be doing street preaching. And if you go to such and such a thing on the tube, and man, I'm going to miss riding the tube in the future. But I got myself there quite easily. And here I am with brothers out preaching the gospel of every different ethnicity. And it didn't matter. We had the same message. It was wonderful. It was beautiful. We're witnessing to Jehovah's Witnesses. And it was great. It was awesome. But no. Forget about that. Don't forget about those positive things. Don't forget about the times when the whole congregation comes to the table of the Lord together and you've had that word of God that has been so powerful and there's such conviction and there's such joy and redemption. Oh, forget about all that. Somebody touched your hair.
Is at what point are you going to snatch your peace? Because you know what? You can be in that place. You can be in that congregation. You can be there. But why? When, if your dignity, now maybe you are in
your peace, your dignity,
in this perfect unicorn church that everybody condemns racism, everybody does what they're supposed to do. And I hope that that's your experience. But if it's not your experience, if you've had to swallow, if you've had to fake smile, if you've had to just say, okay, like it's, and had to pray.
Yeah. If you've actually had to forgive other sinners, just like they've had to forgive you, then you should be angry. Do you hear it? I know people are sitting in the audience going, you're criticizing a black woman. You're dead. It's real simple. Come to me with this and show me where what I'm saying about this black woman counseling black people to go against what this teaches. You show me. You can't, and you know it. This is my standard. This is my authority. This is where I stand. Who's with me? Who's with me? Well, stand with me.
At what point do you leave? And I think that we have scriptural precedents here. Now, of course, this isn't the church. This isn't Jesus. Isn't, I don't want to decontextualize Jesus's words here. But the idea is, if you feel called, I feel called to this space, and maybe you are called to be a prophetic voice and to be a prophetic witness in this space. But at what point do you say, you know what? These are not people of peace. At what point do you say that this place, they have not received what the Lord has been saying to them? At what point do you say this place is unworthy? So I am going to leave, and I'm not only going to leave, I'm going to take my peace. Sometimes we have to snatch up our peace whenever we go. I have had to do that personally, where it's like, no, I've moved around a lot. I've been part of a lot of different congregations with jobs as being a vocational minister and stuff. I've been in different places. And my thing is, I always try to leave in peace. Wherever I go, I always try to leave in peace. But there was one particular congregation, beloved, that I left 2 years ago. That I had to leave, and I had to take my peace with me. And I was like, no, I'm not leaving in peace. I am leaving in protest. I am not okay with this. I am not okay with what's happening. And I had to make it known. And I had to leave loud. And I wish I would have left louder. I left loud, but I wish I would have left louder. And a lot of the reason why I did not leave as loudly as I would have liked to.
Because remember, this movement is leave loud. Jamar Tisby did the next one, and the guy who's doing the interview here did the next one that just dropped, I think maybe this morning or something like that. Leave loud, protest, divide, segregate. Everything that back in 2018 we were saying, sounds like this is the end. Oh, no.
Is because there was a lot of other black people there, a lot of people wrestling through, because we were the most diverse church in our city, which isn't saying a lot, because the city like 90% white, but we were the most diverse church in our city, and people had like such a connection and blah 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 blah. And I'm not diminishing that, I'm just saying like that's what it was. And I had to think about the implications of my actions, of being who I am. I had to think of the implications of my actions for the people who were there. But I still left. I still left loudly. And so I feel like that we have to leave these spaces loud. There's a New York Times article talking about like the quiet exodus. And a lot of us in 2016, 2017, on, we just kind of left, and we just kind of said, okay, well, you know, we're just going to stop fellowshipping with these people. We're just going to say, like, we're just not going to show up to church as much. And maybe we find our way into the black church. Maybe we find our way to some other church, white church, where they act like they got some sense. But instead of having that quiet exodus, where we just put up our little finger, gather our bag, get our purse, and leave, we need to be loud about it because it and I say this, and this isn't about retribution. It isn't about making anybody feel bad about themselves, but these are sinners that are in need of repentance. These are people who are sinning. It is sinful, the things that are happening in some of these churches, in the ways that it's sinful when
yes.
somebody mm-hmm. cannot learn your name and cannot pronounce your name correctly. There is a point where that becomes sin. Whenever you have to tell somebody, whenever they could pronounce Aiden, Jaden, Caden, Waden, Traden, Okaden, they could pronounce that, but they can't pronounce your name.
Allie, it's not all that tough. But you're probably talking about some kind of, I don't know, specialized African name or something. Thabiti, there you go. I could see somebody struggling. Oh, how about Anya Wheelie? I'm not sure anyone says that right. So that's sinful if you don't somehow accomplish that over time, you see. So what's most important here? The most important thing, again, is the narrative. And really underlying all of this is your church has to line up behind the social justice movement. Your church has to promote some form of socialism and social equity and buy the narrative. You know, get involved in the protests and all, you have to buy all the stories and help burn down cities or whatever. And that's really the issue. The issue isn't the fidelity of the preacher to the word of God, the consistency of the exegesis. No, it's none of that. This is a new way of doing it. It's a new definition of what the church is supposed to be in the first place. And that's why you leave.
And because they're not making the effort, that's sin. When they mistake you for the person who is 6 inches shorter than you, has their hair in locks, you wear glasses, they don't, they are 50 pounds heavier than you, and you get mistaken for them and called by their name because all they see is your skin color, and that's it. They just see that this is a Negro, and that's it. There is a point. You've been going to this church for years?
I just have to wonder, do older Black folks ever struggle to make sure to get the right name and pronounce it right for Asian folks? Or does this only go one way? Just asking. Because it sounds like what you're saying is we all need to have our own ethnic churches. That's what you're saying. They're the same people that then go to Revelation chapter 5, men from every tribe, telling people, you know, but they don't really mean it. Huh. That's strange.
That is sinful. That's sinful. That's sin. And you know, whenever pastors preach messages that do not bring the whole counsel of God and do not consider the variety of experiences that are present in their congregation, and even do things to the point where it diminishes people's humanity.
Diminishes?
Whether it's witting or not, it's still sin.
So it's sin. So she gets to determine whether you're proclaiming the whole counsel of God. Now, look. I have seen situations where ministers have lost their way. They've become very focused upon one little thing. But to be honest with you, you know where I'm seeing that most right now? In woke churches. In woke churches. I look at these woke churches that are doing their thing, and they're promoting LGBTQ, and they're promoting every kind of social justice movement. They're not touching the vast majority of God's truth. They've denied a vast majority of it. They're not bringing forth the whole counsel of God. Not even close. Not even close. That's where the real problem is. So you're going to go to those churches? Okay.
And so we can say, oh, hey, you know, I'm called to be in this space, and I'm called to whatever. And I'm just saying, fam, we got to question it. I got to question you on that and say, are you called or are you scared?
Oh.
Are you called to be there? Are you called to go through that indignity? Or are you scared because you don't know where else to go? And have they convinced you that not being part of their fellowship means something about you? And it's
their fellowship, not yours. You know what I actually recognize in this? This is the same language Jehovah's Witnesses use. It's cultic language. It's the language you use to separate people from what they've been a part of and get them into something else. It's the same. This is how Jehovah's Witnesses get people into Jehovah's Witnesses. The Jehovah's Witnesses, they try to find something to get you unhappy with your current fellowship. And then they exploit that crack to make the division wider and wider. Here you've got it. Why are you still there? Why do you still feel called to be with them? Are you afraid? Do you hear this? This is fellow pastors, your people are being exposed to this. Your people are being exposed to this. And I may be the only one who calls this out. No, you know what? I'll take that back. I will take that back. I did tweet Daryl and Virgil about this because they'll take on anything. And I think they are going to address it. At least I hope they do. Because I know in 1 week doing the empathy stuff and everything else, it's, but I don't answer the phone. Rich does. So it's no skin off my nose. I have no empathy for him at all. It's true. It's true. But do you hear what we're hearing? Do you see that this is how you go directly against the clear admonition of Scripture? When you're in the fellowship, you forgive. You do not allow a root of bitterness to develop within you. You do not seek to bring about division in this exact fashion. This is the way you do it. Now, this is a form of unbiblical racism that is being used. But there are so many other things that can function the exact same way. In the exact same way. What's the fruit of CRT? Well, we're listening to it. We're listening to it. And had to take the time to address it. As unpopular as it might be. This is the kind of stuff that divides churches. This ends up leaving people out in the middle of nowhere. Unsafe. And very much likely to be falling into... How many folks were in sound churches? They were getting sound theology. They fell for this stuff. They left. And now they're Black Hebrew Israelites. Now they're looking at the Nation of Islam. Because their protection was taken away.
I think your point...
Why are you doing this? You'd have deniability because you have not said anything. You could just simply say, you know, I listened to it too, but hey, James is the one that said it, so...
I think your point regarding the attitude... I mean, she had a list.
Oh, she did. She repeated it twice.
Yes. It's the grievance list.
Yep.
The list of grievances, the airing of grievances is what we have here. And she's got her special categories here, but if you take those away, all of us who've been in churches like she's been in for many times recognize this lady.
Oh, yeah.
We recognize her, and the pastors recognize her. And I think your point regarding whatever church she lands in, that pastor, she's a plague. The whole perspective is a plague. It doesn't matter what, if she goes to an all-Black church, her perspective isn't going to change. Somebody's going to rub her the wrong way, and somebody better fix it, or else they will pay. And you know what? Who's going to pay first? The pastor is going to pay first, and the elders are going to pay first, and the congregation is going to pay for next, and then the split's going to happen because she's caustic. She's toxic. You can hear it in every bit of her list, and you just sit back and go, I've been down this road before.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So, you know, you can turn the list on her quite easily, but... Ultimately, you're right. She's looking for segregation.
Yeah,
but it will not solve her problem.
But no, it won't solve her problems. And it, and of course, the issue in our day is the effectiveness of this, because there are so many, like that guy, whatever his name was, I already closed the stuff. At least I think I did. Yeah, that did that original tweet. The guy wrote the book, White Too Long or whatever. These folks are being encouraged by people on the other side to attack the church in this fashion. And so they're being successful at it. That's part of the issue. But I had to, you know, once I heard it, I'm like, I can't be quiet. Self-preservation would say to be quiet. But if this was any other subject, if this was somebody using this same kind of argumentation to promote any other kind of division, you'd have to call it out. You'd have to call it out. But today, you're an old white man. You can't talk about this. Well, the fact of the matter is, if I was an old black man, if I was a young black man, all you'd do is then call me names, other kinds of names, in the same way. That's the reality. You know it. It's real simple. You want to be angry at me? Pick it up. Pick it up. Show me where what I said was wrong. If you can't, don't bother. Just don't bother. So, fellow pastors, be careful. Be careful. There are people out there literally using their platforms to encourage people in your congregation to develop a root of bitterness, to divide, segregate, and destroy the fellowship of the church. And they're doing it under the guise of social justice. So be on the watch. Be prayerful. All right. Well, that makes for, I don't know how many hours this week on, I don't know how many different topics. We have been in the other studio. We have done Greek, and we've done open theism and Romans 9, and oh, good grief. We've covered the gamut this week. Hopefully that's been helpful to you. Lord willing, like I keep saying these days, especially after a program like this, Lord willing, we'll see you again next week. If not where you're getting it now, from some other source, we'll try to let you know one way or the other. But thank you for listening. Hope it was helpful to you. We'll see you next time. God bless.